And now, John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Michael Bloomberg. Sponsored by the Heart Institute of Staten Island. Don't let your heart skip a beat.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome aboard our Friday get-together. Yes, indeed. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. Nice weather. Hot.
Hot. Well, it's supposed to be. It's almost summertime.
That is true. What happened to spring? We went from cold to hot.
We did indeed. First day of hurricane season. I saw that your emergency management official, top guy, Joe Bruno.
Hurricanes are actually relatively easy to plan for because you know they're coming.
For weeks.
But it's only 24 hours earlier that you really have to start mobilizing and planning and implementing stuff. But we've got this plan. We know where we've got to evacuate people. We know where they're going to go. We've got cots and water and somebody to take care of the pets and somebody to help the nursing home people and somebody to go door to door and ring the bell and make sure. And hopefully you never have to use any of that stuff.
Exactly. So we'll hope that this season is going to be a calm one as it has been in the past. Let's see. Where do we want to start here? Let me ask you about this the story that has been the headlines for the last couple of days about the guy with TB and the fact that he was allowed. The point I want to ask you about is the fact that he was allowed back into this country by a U.S. border security agent who made a bad decision. Now, security, whether it's terror, TB, is only as good as the weakest link.
Yeah, that's true, but you have to, if you have multiple links or multiple paths, we always say, oh, look, it's terrible. We had all these levels of backup and they still got through. Yeah, but all the other stuff got stopped. I don't work for the customs service.
No, I understand. This is more of a security issue, the question.
Guarding borders sounds like it's easy. You know how long the border is? With Mexico, it's a couple thousand miles. With Canada, it's 3,000 miles. You got enormous amounts of ocean with some islands close by. The number of people that arrive on airplanes is, in the tens and hundreds of thousands a day. So it's very easy to criticize the Customs and Immigration Service. From what I understand that they have is that, in all fairness, while there's still we treat too many people not as guests but as potential terrorists when they approach the border, and there's a fine balance between keeping out terrorists but also making this a country where people want to come. Too many companies now are having their international meetings overseas because people just don't want to go through the aggravation of going through security here. Now, we need the security, and the question is, how do you find the right balance? And my understanding is they've actually, Customs and Immigration have made some improvements and are going in the right direction. Whether they're as efficient as you'd want them to be, I just don't know.
That's really true. I'm not suggesting what you said isn't true, but I'm surprised to hear that companies would not hold international conferences here.
Because of London is an attractive city. Tokyo is an attractive city. There are places all over the world that are trying to get business for conventions and meetings. In this day and age, big companies have offices around the world. And if half the people from outside the country have to come to this country, it's equal to taking the half that are in this country and sending them elsewhere. Nobody wants to be... it's first impressions. You get to a country, to their border, and if they say, Mr. Gambling, welcome, thank you for coming, we love you, and, oh, by the way, unfortunately for security reasons, you have to understand, I must check your bag. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
You don't want to go through security, let's say for an airplane, where they don't check. If you get up to and they just let you go by, you say, wait a second, letting me go by, what about the other guy? I'm not sure I want to get on that airplane. But you also have to do it politely. And in all fairness, in the past, different countries have gone through periods where they've been very difficult, and some they welcome you with a smile, some they don't. And in this country, when I've come through customs and immigration, I will say most of the times they've had smiles on their faces. They didn't, long before I was mayor, and there are some that are not particularly nice and don't understand that this country needs people to want to come here. at the same time, we need the security.
Yep, it is a tough balance here, but it seems that.
And what happened with this guy? It's a great story, but who knows?
The specifics are maybe not.
Yeah,
not
our important. Commissioner Tom Frieden, Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, who happens to be an expert on tuberculosis, said no danger. You should ask him if you want it to be interesting. Get Tom on and talk about communicable diseases and what's the likelihood of somebody ever coming here and infecting a lot of people. This is Tom's expertise. He is a world-renowned epidemiologist.
And interesting how the news cycles go, though, because if you remember, it was a year ago when the bird flu was a big issue.
And what now happened to bird flu?
Exactly. It must have flown away or something because we don't hear about it any longer.
Well, some of these things, they just because they're not in the press, in all fairness, doesn't mean they aren't as serious or even maybe more serious. The press, you know, as we all know, goes from attractive, sexy, new issue to attractive, sexy, new issue. And after a few days of bird flu,
it's not terribly attractive.
Let's look at mad cow disease or something. Yeah.
All right, let's take a break here. We'll take the first one real fast, and we'll get right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77. All right, we continue here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC, the John Gambling Show. We talked about tax rebates and surpluses we have on a regular basis over the last couple of months. You said, I think it was 2 weeks ago, that with the surpluses, that you thought it much more prudent for us to keep a lot of that in the bank and not spend it. Now there's talk about giving more.
Well,
rebate.
Everybody would like to reduce their taxes today and think that tomorrow is going to take care of itself. I don't think that's a prudent way to run your finances and your household or the city's or mine. And most of the extra money that we have at the moment, we're going to use next year and the year after, because we can look and see our expenses growing. They're just built into contracts, whether it's with unions or suppliers or whatever. And, you know, there's no reason to think that the great stock market and property tax boom is going to go on forever. It's prudent to have a rainy day fund. So, you know, you might be able to can you have a bigger tax cut? It depends if you spend less.
So, I hear from going from 5 to 8%. Is that a
if you did that,
real?
Fine. But, well, the city council would have to approve it, but they want to have lots of other things. You want to cut out all the other things? Then sure. But, you know, this is a trade-off. There's no easy answer. There's no everything. This is a zero-sum game in the sense that you have a certain amount of money. You can either take less money, in which case you got to spend less, or you can take more money, in which case you got to spend more. Those that think government should be smaller clearly think you should cut back on your expenses and cut back on your taxes. Those that think that government should provide more services are on the other side of that, and I think from a practical point of view, you want to balance, and we'll have to see. I'd like to take a look. We still have two or three weeks to go before you have to negotiate a budget, but I'd like to see what our tax revenues are like. I'd like to take another look at all of our projections for how much we're going to spend this year and next year and what labor contracts are likely to cost us. And then we still have to take the vast bulk. We have a $48 billion liability for health care benefits for our municipal employees. We funded our pension fund, which is exactly the same, and everybody, if we underfunded our pension fund, people would be yelling and screaming. They'd be manning the barricades. You can see in New Jersey, the SEC started to investigate. Well, we fund our pension fund. This is exactly the same obligation. There's no difference. We have the same obligation, basically the same people. In this case, it's providing, rather than money to live on, it's money to pay for the health care plan, but it's an obligation of the city, and we never funded it. And I've started to fund it. We've got $2.5 billion towards what's estimated to be a $50 billion liability. That hasn't gone away.
The key here is that those initiatives that you've taken with pension and health and other things need to be continued by whoever follows you.
Yes, but, you know, everybody, as you can see what they must have done in New Jersey, through gimmicks, they postponed putting money in and said, look.
Oh, it's a horror show.
It is a horror show. What happens is somebody says, well, let's, you know, I don't want to tell the public that there's cost and there's pain and they've got to reach into their pockets. So I'll tell them things are okay. And then down the road, whoever succeeds me will have to give them the bad news. Or, you know, maybe I'll be in a different job, or maybe I'll die. Who knows? You know, it's the old joke of God appears before the surf, or the czar is going to kill the surf, and the surf says, no, I can teach your horse how to talk. And the czar says, you can do that? And he says, yes, I can do that. So the czar says, I'll tell you what, here's my horse. I'll come back in 2 years. But if you don't teach him how to talk, I'll kill you. The wife says to the serf after the czar leaves, you can't teach the horse how to talk. And he says, well, number one, maybe I can. And number two, maybe I'll die, or maybe the czar will die. But it's, anything's better postponing, and that's exactly
where
what
I was.
Do. Right.
I completely understand. But unfortunately, that attitude and that story are the way too much of our politic and dollars and cents work.
Well, I'm not responsible for too much of our politic and dollars and cents. I'm responsible for the city. And I'm determined that when I leave the city, we won't have my successor, the first year in office, won't have enormous deficits to deal with, that they'll be able to learn the ropes and staff up, which takes a while, and get things going without having to face the kind of difficult decisions that this administration had to face.
All right, you've got budgets, you follow them closely, and you have been tough on your commissioners. What happened in the housing authority? How come they're so far behind the deficit that they're running?
Well, it's been getting bigger. Last year they plugged it. Last year we raised rents. I would have thought there'd be more screaming, but we raised the rents on those people in public housing whose income was at the high end, where they were paying a smaller percentage of their income towards housing than people who are living in private housing. That's not fair. The city is not in the business to subsidize housing for people that can afford it. That's the private sector. The idea of public housing is for those that really are struggling. And so for those who are struggling, we didn't raise it. For the higher end, we did. That helped us get through last year. But, you know, our costs keep going up. Fuel, energy keeps going up. That's a real cost.
Is there going to be a rent increase? Another one?
Everything is on the table. I don't think so, but we've got to balance the budget some ways. The city can only put so much into public housing. We've got lots of other obligations, and the Tino Hernandez is a very good guy who's running the New York City Housing Authority, NYCHA it's called. He's got to find ways to do more with less, because I'm determined we're not going to go back to the days where these complexes were full of crime, or where the lawns were filthy, or where the appliances broke down and the elevators didn't work and the locks were broken. We are going to provide good quality housing, but we're also going to do it where it's going to pay for itself. And incidentally, the state...
I was going to ask you, that was my next question.
The state has an obligation, a lot of this, and they've not come through.
How about the feds? Aren't they involved?
And the feds as well. But, you know, they've not come through. So all of a sudden we sit here and Tino's got to solve that problem. Nobody ever said it's easy. And everybody says, you know, those people who wanted in the city council who want bigger tax cuts, they also say, oh, well, let's subsidize NYCHA. I'm sorry, you can't do everything.
All right, let's see here. Building standards, inspections. The city council, again, putting the squeeze on, or putting a bill out that would put the squeeze on slumlords, landlords that aren't doing the job. Do we need another bill? There are laws in the books, aren't there, that these people can't do this?
I think that the commissioner for HPD, Housing Preservation Development, Sean Donovan, would say there are some improvements to the law that would give our inspectors the ability to get in a little bit better when there are complaints. What we do now is we give the landlord a warning. Landlord's supposed to fix up to minimum standards. If they don't, then we do it and send them a bill. And if they don't pay it, you put a lien on the property. So you do collect. Some of them break down. They really need more. We're putting Band-Aids on, let's say, a heating system that's always going to break down. Maybe this would give us the ability to say to the landlord, look, you've got to provide a standard here. Society has said you can't have holes in the roof, and you've got to provide hot water and things like that and heat. And if you don't, then you've got to replace the systems. And so there are some things we can do. But generally speaking, the real problems are with a very small number of landlords. Most, you know, in all fairness, do a decent job. But there's a handful that everything they touch, they seem to turn to,
not a good thing at all. Enough inspectors? Probably never enough inspectors.
Never enough. But you know, you want more inspectors, then you can't do everything. So that's always the case. We have things in the buildings department, self-certification. Reputable architects and builders certify that they are in compliance, and we check only periodically. People say, oh, I don't like self-certification. Let's have inspectors look at everything. Yeah, fine. Your taxes are going to pay for more inspectors. You know, eventually you have so many inspectors you can't walk down the street. It's loaded with inspectors.
I saw a small story in the paper, I think it was even this morning, that Fire Commissioner Scapetta was looking for and not getting emergency plans.
Half the buildings have done it, half have not. He's really working them over, and we're going to get them. The law says you have to do it, and that's really a serious thing. You know, it should have been done by now. Would have been nice, but the real world is.
And this is basically to have on file with the emergency management office or some office.
Yeah, there's plans of how you evacuate the building and certain building plans that have to be updated.
So that you know, so
sure.
The rescue people.
Yeah, and we're trying to get the fire department the ability to download plans so that they can take a look before they go into a building. Anytime there's construction, structural work. We did have a fire that killed a firefighter and a lieutenant about a year or so ago, where the they'd taken out some beams in the basement, and when these guys, you know, rushed in to put out the fire, the floor gave way. So you want to update that. Then, of course, somebody's going to say, oh, but we have building plans on file. Terrorists could get the building plans. Well, you know.
Exactly. You always keep the balls in the air most of the time. Be interesting, though, if you could take that information and put it on a screen on rescue vehicles.
Oh, yeah,
so
you
that
can
you,
do
you know, you can have it right there.
Technology is there to do it. That's the direction we're going in.
All right, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, lots more as we... All right, we've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg here as we do each and every Friday. We'll be taking your telephone calls, 1-800-848-WABC, in just a couple of moments. Your GARP...
Years of us doing this every Friday.
Probably, hopefully, do it with the next guy.
Or woman.
Or woman. I was just about to...
Thank you very much. That's not, you
complete
know.
The sentence. You're absolutely right. It could very well be. Ms. Quinn, I understand, is actually...
I don't know, but she's done a good job.
So
there are
like
four people. Speculation is there are four people who are running so far and maybe others. You know, I've always believed that the public should have a big choice, and that's a good idea.
And you'll be doing after this?
I will be... I can tell you exactly what I'm going to do. On January 1st, 2010, I will go to the inauguration of my successor. Hopefully it's warmer than it was on my first inauguration. On January 2nd, I will go to my mother's birthday. I think she'll be 101. Go up to Boston, take her to dinner. She can fit me into the schedule. On January 3, I will have gone 8 years without a vacation. Maybe I'd go play golf for a week. Then I don't know.
Okay.
But at least I've got the beginning planned out.
Fair enough.
You get into it.
Fair
you know?
Enough, you know, fair
People
enough.
Say you what don't have long-term plans. Come on.
Okay, exactly. I'm glad to hear that. Speaking of long-term plans, the garbage plan has been long-term in coming, and now
30 years.
And now I understand Albany wants to throw it out. Trash. Or at least three people in Albany.
I was going to say, I hope that's not the case. What's happened, you know, during Giuliani's term, they closed the Staten Island landfill, which is where the city put all its garbage. And while every once in a while the Advance or some of the local politicians in Staten Island always yell and scream, let's make sure they don't reopen it. You couldn't reopen it if you wanted to with today's environmental things. So people in Staten Island do not have to worry. We will never, ever reopen that. And in fact, over the next 20 years, as it becomes safe to use, this will create one of the biggest parks in the city. And the plans are really quite spectacular, and people of Staten Island will benefit from that. In its replacement, what we've done is we've trucked garbage to other states who are willing to take it. And you pay a lot of money to truck it, and you pay a lot of money called tipping fees for them to take it. The trouble is that these trucks pollute everything. And there's only a certain places where you can put the stuff into big trucks. So in some parts of the city, they get a very disproportionate part of all of the solid waste coming there. And remember, the city sanitation department picks up all the residential trash, which is only about half of it. I think the city generates 22,000 tons a day, of which roughly half is residential. The commercial side, the other half, is picked up by private carters, and they do the same thing. They drive these trucks through our streets. It's congestion, but, you know, they just belch junk into the air. We've come up with a plan, the Solid Waste Management Plan, SWMP, otherwise known as the SWAMP. Yeah, I love the name. And the SWAMP has each borough taking care of its own solid waste, basically. You can't perfect, but almost. Manhattan is the most difficult one because there's not a lot of open land. But the idea is we will containerize the trash, compress it and containerize it, and then take it out of the city by rail or barge, and then someplace else put those closed seal containers on trains that go down to whatever state we are paying to take our...
This was all signed, sealed, and delivered.
Yeah, right? Except that the one thing we need is there is the solid waste, the marine transfer station for Manhattan, where the Manhattan solid residential trash gets compacted and containerized, is on the Gansevoort Peninsula, which is, think of it as a village on the west side. You need to change state law because there's a state law creating a wonderful park going up the west side, and you have to carve out an exemption for this. If we didn't do this, then the only solution is to still truck through our streets and pollute our air that our kids and you and I are breathing. And it has a cascading effect, because if we can't do this, then we can't take, it's complicated, but this and another pier in the 50s, which handles commercial waste, there's also recyclable stuff, and if one thing doesn't work, then just the whole system
so
falls apart.
So the three assemblymen, I understand, that have...
Well, I hope when push comes to shove, they will understand it is in the city's interest, and there are no alternatives. One assembly person says there are alternatives. We've looked and looked and looked, and it doesn't work. And you mentioned Christine Quinn before. This is her city council district. And in all fairness, she has stood up and said, look, I don't like it in my district, but there's no other practical place, and the city needs this. And she was asked a question yesterday. We were doing a press event over there about community objections, and she said she's gotten very few objections. People understand you have to have services, and we have to pick up the trash. We have to plow the streets. We have to put sand down and salt. We have to have tow pounds. You have to have a lot of things in the city you'd prefer not to have, and you certainly don't want in your neighborhood. They got to be in somebody's neighborhood. And sometimes there are physical reasons why they can't go anyplace else, and this is one of those. So hopefully everybody in Albany gets on board and this gets done, because the consequences for the city would be very severe.
Is there a time frame? It's got to be before they go on vacation, right?
Yeah, but one of the answers to, people say, oh, we can do these things later. How would you go and look the mother of a little child who's got an asthma rate of going to the hospital four times the national average and say, well, we have time, miss, it's only your kid? I don't think you'd feel that way if it was your child. And so a lot of these things we say, do we have time? Well, it depends where you are and who you're looking, who you ask whether we have time. Should we be here? No. Could we get it done? Should we have done it earlier? Yes. But not doing it tomorrow is not an acceptable if you can do it today.
Don Freen, the health commissioner, has he given you an explanation why in East Harlem, because I understand you're going to be opening up an asthma center up there, why it has the dirtiest air in New York City? Is there something about that location?
You can look in a lot of these neighborhoods. There's an enormous amount of truck traffic on the streets, mm-hmm. and the cars getting stuck at intersections. This is science. You can model it, and you can predict where it's going to be. It typically is in poorer neighborhoods because the houses, in many cases, are more compact there.
Okay. While we're in Albany here, congestion pricing, they have not ruled in your favor yet the governor seems to think that it's maybe got some
legs.
Well, it's
very encouraging. Shelley Silver scheduled some hearings, and Joe Bruno has been talking about it, and the governor's been talking about it. I think those are the three key leaders, and they're responsible officials, and they're doing the due diligence and listening to people, and it's up to us to make our case. Am I optimistic? I always never want to jinx anything, but I think they'll come. I hope that we can convince them that there's a unique opportunity now. We have the possibility of getting $400 or $500 million from a federal trust fund that is part of a $1.1 billion trust fund that will be given away next month in July. And if we don't get this legislation right now, we're not going to get that. Without that, there's no money for a lot of mass transit.
You need to know that by the end of the month.
The session in Albany, assuming they pass their final and go home on June 21, it has to be done. You've got 20-odd days left. And if we don't do it now, then the federal money will be given elsewhere for demonstration projects. Without that, we don't have any money for mass transit improvements. And I've said we will do the mass transit improvements before we start charging. But we've got to have the money to do that. Got to have the money to do it. And also, to implement congestion pricing would take a lot of technology. Who's going to pay for that? Federal government has – we're very encouraged because they want the demonstration project. So we think that we've got an excellent chance of getting that kind of money. And if we don't do it now, then we don't have it, and I don't know how you'd come back. Where's the money going to come from?
Can you give us a 101 course on technically how that gets done?
There's a couple of ways you can do it. One is a device in your windshield, an easy pass thing. Another one, which is done in London, is a camera that photographs license plate. The computer says, entered here, left here, and sends your bill.
Oh, okay.
So, and do people pay the bill? Yeah, most people do pay the bill.
Would you reduce the number of accesses?
No, you could do it on
points
every corner.
Points of access?
There's no reason to. You see, that's the nice thing about computers.
So you put all of these things on every street, or whatever it is.
But that's why you can come across the Brooklyn Bridge and take the FDR if you're going to Yankee Stadium, and we wouldn't charge you. But if you came across the Brooklyn Bridge and went into the center of Manhattan, we would charge you. That's how we can know if you live in Manhattan and you don't come in and out, but you drive, but not charge you if you just move your car for alternate side of the street parking. I mean, you can do all of these things once you have technology. You got to stop and rethink. People talk about tolling bridges. Nobody in this day would, if you start out from scratch, would toll a bridge. Why would you have a choke point on a bridge where everybody's got to go through? Number one, if you sold tokens, sell it 2 miles away where people can pull off into a parking lot and buy their token or buy a month's worth of tokens, whatever the case may be. And two, do it with technology and you don't have to toll a bridge. And one of the big things here, in Brooklyn and Queens, there's an enormous amount of traffic in those two boroughs from people trying to avoid going through the tolls, the Triborough Bridge or the Midtown or Brooklyn Battery tunnels. So people, to avoid that, those three places, go all around and pollute the air and tie up the traffic. If you had the congestion pricing system, which was offset by tolls, there'd be no reason to do that, and you'd cut a lot of pollution out in Queens and Brooklyn. Plus, remember, when we generate pollution in Manhattan, the prevailing winds takes all of that stuff right to the people's lungs in Brooklyn and Queens. So they're very big beneficiaries of this.
All right. Before we go to a break, and then we'll take some questions on the telephone, 1-800-848-WABC, your reaction to the scalping law that Albany is talking about?
I've always thought that the vendor at the ticket booth should sell to everybody and not just hold them back, but once you own a ticket, why shouldn't you be able to resell it? Let the marketplace worry. But the government's got enough things to do.
The issue is, though, in my view, just
well, you want to make sure
that the venues are giving these things out to be resold.
Right. You want to make sure that everybody gets a fair chance. They should sell, and if they should, limit the number of tickets. So the scalper's got to stand in line 20 times if he wants to buy 20 tickets. Okay, nothing wrong with that. But then if they want to resell it, let the free market. If you have a ticket and George Weber wants to buy it, why shouldn't you be able to deal with them?
Okay. Let's take our break right here. We'll come. All right, a couple more minutes here with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Chris Wallace from Fox News Sunday is going to join us, as he always does, in our next hour. Let's go to the phones, Mr. Mayor. We're going to start with Ruth in Queens. Ruth, you've got the mayor. Go. Oh, I got to push the button. Otherwise, we'll never hear Ruth. Ruth,
hi.
Go ahead. Go. There you go.
Hi.
Ruth.
I'm very happy to be able to speak to you. And you, John, I listen every single day.
Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you, Mayor, for doing a great job. But I think you are really in a problem with me when it comes to a retired person. Me and my husband worked all our lives here in the city. We're now retired. And you're making it to a point where, yes, we own our apartment in Queens. And we come into the city, but with our car. We're senior citizens. I don't use the subways at all. And we support both the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Jewish Museum. I'm a member of both, but we come in with our cars.
Well, Ruth, it is money. It is not an inconsequential amount of money, but we have a problem, and the problem is there are too many cars for the roads, and the air that you are breathing is getting worse, and we've got to do something about it. If you've got some better ideas, I'd love to hear them. What the idea with congestion pricing is the idea behind it is to get people to use mass transit more, which will give mass transit more fares, and they can use that to improve mass transit, and to charge those who drive a little bit so that they can, we can take those monies and also sink all of those monies into improving mass transit. Now, you know, coming into Manhattan, as you know, is not cheap. You can spend $40 or $50 a day in a garage. It's just
a couple of hours.
Well, I don't, maybe 24 hours for to get up to $50. But sure, I mean, it costs a lot of money. And the extra money that Ruth spends on fuel and her and her husband's time, as well as their health, you know, there's no easy answers to complex problems. If there were, they would have been fixed a long time ago. But this is a practical solution that has worked elsewhere, and I think it is worth a try. And Ruth, if it turns out not to be a good idea, then we should not do it. What I've asked Albany is for the ability to first fix mass transit or improve mass transit, then try it for a couple of years. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. In the meantime, does it cost more? Yes, but everything costs more. And if you want the benefits of cleaner air and less congestion, we've got to pay for it. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Ruth, thanks for the telephone call. Let's go to Michael in Brooklyn. Michael, you've got the ear of the mayor. Go.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good. Get right to it, Michael.
Okay, my question is regarding, you were talking about the slumlords and stuff, which I understand those people that are not providing heat, adequate housing, should be fined, should be found guilty. I'm talking about, I'm a landlord, have a three-family house in Midwood, which I was providing heat, hot water. Everything was pristine in a four-bedroom apartment, splitting rent up when the gentleman decided he's just not going to come up with rent. And this is his fourth offense, went in front of the judge numerous times, which he delayed, postponed. Now he's living out in Jersey, and you cannot collect from people like this. What about those good landlords out there?
You know, Michael, I'm sympathetic, and I think the law should protect a good landlord the same way as, you know, we all have a right to earn a living, and a landlord has a right to collect a fair rent for providing a good service. And if people get that service, I couldn't agree more. I think the court should make sure that you are protected. We can't ask landlords to do things and then not expect them to be able to make a living. And, you know, if you go before the Rent Guidelines Board and everybody's always yelling and screaming, tenants want to pay less and landlords want to get more. But the truth of the matter is, if it's not a business where you can make a living, people won't do it. And we want people to build and to rent apartments. Otherwise, we don't have places
to live.
You hear
anecdotally that it's tough to collect rent from people that decide not to pay. I mean, it's a long, drawn-out process.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be. I mean, I'm sympathetic to making it easier. Look, the city's got a problem. We have people pay their property taxes, but a lot of people don't pay their water fees. And your water fee and my water fee is a lot higher because there are some deadbeats that don't pay it. And one of the things I've gone to the city council and say is, give us the ability to collect, because it's not fair that some people pay and other people say, oh, I'm not going to pay. So let somebody else pay. That's just not the right thing to do. Because then the question is, can you turn off water in an apartment? People can't live without it.
You got to have some leverage. You got to have some juice.
Well, that's
the only way you're going to collect.
Absolutely.
All right, let's see here. How about Gary on Long Island? Gary, you've got the mayor in a very short amount of time. Go, what's your question?
Hey, right
to it.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate all the hard work you're doing for New York City. Thank you. My question's about the commercial parking with pickup trucks in New York City with the Cab Plus, you know, having the extra seat in the back. We bring in four or five guys on the crew, we park, we pay the muni meter, we're all lettered up, and yet we get a ticket because we have a back seat. What can be done about that?
I have, to be honest with you, no idea. I didn't know there was a rule.
I'd never heard that either, that there's a rule about having a back seat in a pickup truck.
I'll tell you what, why don't you and I do some research, and if you make a note, we will give Gary an answer on this program next week, which will get him and everybody who's listening today holding their breath for a week.
Why is Stu, your press secretary, carrying a bucket of fish?
Because today is the opening of the new sea lion pool at the Bronx Zoo, and I'm going right from here up there to throw out the first fish.
Are you going to climb out on the rocks?
I did it a couple years ago and almost fell into the pool. I got a big round of applause and screams.
From the sea lion.
I don't remember. I don't remember, but I'll give you a full report.
All right. We'll see you next Friday. Mayor Michael Bloomberg.